From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 19th day of March 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Gary Schnitke will be here this afternoon to talk about anhydrous ammonia nitrogen applications and the most economical form of application that you can put on this year. It's actually just the MRTN or the recommended amount, but you'll be surprised by how much money it will save per acre. So stay tuned to hear that. We'll also discuss what's happening in the agricultural energies and take up anhydrous ammonia and its potential to have some problems as it's trying to be allocated out this year. That with Dave Chatterton. He'll discuss a whole lot more than the Ag Energies this afternoon. He's with the Powerline Group, and as we close out our time together, we'll take up the weather forecast with Don Day at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, and it all happens on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, now joins us to take a look at what happened in Chicago for the day. Good afternoon to you, Wayne. Thanks for being with us.
Well, good to be here, Todd.
I guess the good news came at the end of the trading day. What happened?
Well, we got the Wall Street Journal put out of a few headlines that said the U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer and Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin will be flying to Beijing a week of March 25th. And then the next line says the vice premier will be in Washington the following week. And the last line says U.S.-China talks in final stages. A little bit different than sort of what Secretary of Agriculture said earlier in the day on Bloomberg when they said, well, when can we have this done? And he threw in sort of the phrase that said, well, these negotiations a lot of times take years. And I think that's what but we're putting on a fast track. But when he put in the years bit, that was the little bit that sort of let us sell off after the reopen this morning along the way. So we were up, we sold off a little bit. We come back on this other good news that we are proceeding along and doing good. But basically, we're in a waiting game here, I guess is how you would say it. We've watched them talk about increased world supply, the money flow, which was the funds continuing to short this market. We've got a lot of wet weather everywhere, flooding everywhere you look on anything out west, but we don't seem to be scared of late planting it, and no trade deal is sort of what's pushed us in the short term. But, a lot of us are looking forward to that report at the end of the month here. One of the things that sort of upsets or has people wondering a little bit, a little positive outcome might be the NAS harvest, their objective test plots in September and first week of October. But yet when we're looking at the seed company's test plots and the producer data that we're seeing come in, that the harvest yield was lower than NAS yields in many areas, and wonder if there could be a surprise in the grain stocks come here in March.
Yeah, so I thought you were going to talk about the acreage numbers there for a moment, but grain stocks is the other big report that is due out on the 29th. That's Friday at the end of this month, not this week, but the following Friday. So we'll be watching those numbers pretty closely. Would we see that? I mean, where would we see that in the USDA numbers? Because USDA would have to forward figure, I guess, what ending stocks would look like if they think there's just fewer bushels around at some point.
Well, we're not sure they will, but that was one of the positive things we could look at today. And we're always looking for something positive to talk about.
That. I see.
Now, I think that they could lower the yield. They might not in this one as far as it goes, but...
Well, there won't be a place to do that in this one. It would have to come in a WASDE or a grain... It would come in a WASDE report at some time, probably at the end of the end of the year,
If the stocks just aren't there, we might not explain it, but they could go down a little lower than what we're expecting. So we hope that maybe that could happen too, but, we're getting down. We've seemed to have held some good support here. Last week we had the weekly reversal up. And if we can make it through the full moon tomorrow and a crazy things like that happening, I think that along with the good news coming out of the trade talks, that maybe we can see a little better positive activity here.
Lots of revisions at this point. Hey, one other thing. I know you've been talking to producers on the phone quite a bit over the last week. Are they starting to get anxious in our area? Because sometimes at this time of the year, we're within, well, there is some planting already happening, but certainly we're within a couple of weeks of getting in the field. I don't know that that's quite the case this year.
They seem to be more relaxed in our area than usual. I think it's just so wet, they know it's no need to get mud on the tires quite yet. But give us a couple weeks and the temperatures and some sun, and we'll have a whole lot of people getting tractors, planters out and getting going along the way. But I think that, for right now, they're sitting back. It's going to be a big land auction here tonight, about 643 acres. Everybody's trying to guess what it's going to bring. Somewhere between 9,000 and 11,000 is the estimates. So.
We'll watch that. Hey, and I know you mentioned it earlier on, but Nebraska in particular, along the Platte, the Missouri, and the Red River eventually going north through the Dakotas could be a problem. The trade hasn't taken much worry out of that, but it seems like we have an awful long time for the snowmelt to happen.
Oh, my gosh. The Wall Street Journal also said that 9 million people and a whole lot more livestock are impacted by the severe flooding out in that area. So, I mean, just can you imagine 9 million people are being affected by this? And, I mean, and a flood is no fun to we're seeing picture upon picture of bins that the farmers say along with them, and they're still full, and there's water halfway up them. Can you imagine what's going to be trying to get those scooped out when the water goes down? And, you know, that's going to be some grain loss too along the way. So, some of our inventory is being taken care of the wrong way.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us. We'll talk with you again in a week.
Thank you, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Hey, as of today, you can find the Closing Market Report Commodity Week and the Opening Market Report in all of your favorite podcast applications. Well, probably most of them. That would include iTunes, Google Play Podcast, and now, as of today, Spotify. We're also in SoundCloud, Stitcher, and the NPR One app. So Spotify has been added as of today. If you use it for music, well, you can also use it to listen to the Closing Market Report. In today's agricultural news, the White House release of supplementary budget documents yesterday included its rationales for reducing funding for many USDA programs and eliminating some entirely. The Trump administration's fiscal 2020 budget request calls for a 15% reduction in overall funding. There would be deeper cuts in the Economic Research Service at USDA, or the ERS. The blueprint calls for ERS funding to be lowered by some $26 million. That's about 30% compared with its prior year level. The White House says it would deliver the reduction by scrapping, quote, low-priority, unquote, research that it believes is duplicative of research at land-grant universities. Forest and rangeland money would also be cut by $45 million, and money for research and recreation, bioenergy, and urban stewardship would be reduced or eliminated. The White House also identified Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue's plan to relocate ERS and the National Institute for Food and Agriculture out of Washington, D.C. as another opportunity for savings, in part due to the high cost of living in the capital region. The White House envisions a budget that includes money for 160 full-time employees at ERS, lowering the agency's total staff by more than 50% from its fiscal 2019 estimate of 329. Forest Research Service would also see positions eliminated as part of the White House proposal to reorient the agency to focus on wildlife research and the Forest Inventory and Analysis Program. Let's come out of Washington, D.C. for the moment and visit the state to the south. Here, Kentucky. The Department of Agriculture there has released some pretty remarkable hemp figures. That's right, hemp. Sales of Kentucky-grown hemp products were more than 3.5 times higher than in 2017. Last year, and the amount farmers were paid for their harvest more than doubled. By the numbers, hemp processors reported $57.75 million in gross product sales in Kentucky last year, compared to $16.7 million in the previous year. Processors paid Kentucky farmers nearly $18 million for harvested hemp materials in 2018. That's up from $7.5 million in 2017. And finally today, floodwaters are still rising in parts of the Midwest and receding in other places as officials in states blasted by last week's bomb cyclone winter storm continue surveying the damage to farms, infrastructure, and towns. Emergency or disaster declarations remain in place in eastern Nebraska and western Iowa, two of the hardest hit areas. And that's a quick look at the day's agricultural news. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Gary Schnittke is here now, agricultural economist from the U of I. He's pinned an article for the Farm Doc Daily website. You can find it at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. It's on anhydrous ammonia, actually nitrogen, as it's related to corn production across the United States. He is concerned that producers are up against the gun financially this spring. And let's take a look at the economics of a product, a fertilizer, that has gone up in price since last fall. And it's pretty high priced, comparatively speaking, to recent history, I take it.
Yeah, so anhydrous ammonia, last report we've had from Illinois Production Cost Report, was average price in Illinois for March of $615 per ton. That's almost $100 per ton higher than last year. Obviously, that's going to increase the cost of putting nitrogen on farmland this year.
How's it compare to previous years?
So this it's up. The 2019 cost will be higher than the last 3 years. The last time we had higher prices than we do now was in 2015, and then anhydrous ammonia was roughly $700 per ton.
Yeah, and so that's comparison on today's prices to today's prices those previous 4 years.
Yeah, that would
be not the fall price, but the March price.
Yeah, the March price. We're making comparisons to March in each one of those years.
So the MRTN, which is the nitrogen or in-rate calculator, and folks can look this up, just search Google for in-rate calculator. It is on the Iowa State University website, but it's good for all 12 Midwestern states and every county in those states, so you can find your location. That, in the state of Illinois, can be used across the state to optimize the rate of application. What does it show you? And I know you use some of the economics out of it to see how things differ at different rates for farmers.
Yeah, so we looked at the MRTNs, and for central Illinois farms using anhydrous ammonia, the MRTN is 174 pounds of nitrogen per acre, and that's actual N, not as applied. So 174 pounds of actual N per acre, that's using anhydrous ammonia, and that's the ballpark for where it usually is at in central Illinois. Prices do matter some, but mainly it's pretty sticky there in that 170 pounds per acre.
Yeah, so. And in fact, Emerson Nafziger, agronomist retired now from the University of Illinois, says that's the number for probably the upper two-thirds of the state,
yeah,
but run the numbers yourself. If you're in southern Illinois, it's going to be a little higher.
Yeah, absolutely right. So 174 pounds per acre. Those, when they develop those MRTNs, that's supposed to be the maximum level of profit. So if we're maximizing our profit there, any additions to that will lower returns.
Yeah. So to clarify, because the MRTN will say optimized level of nitrogen, but the optimization is for the maximum return on investment or income.
Yeah, that's right. So they take into consideration where that additional pound of nitrogen, where the yield break point is that after you begin putting more on, the yield isn't there to cover the cost.
So you did some work, put the numbers in, and ran the economics on different rates. What did
it show? Yeah, so let's say you're applying 50 pounds of N above that. You're going to use 28% because you're probably going to put it on in the fall. But if you're in the spring this year, if you're putting 50 pounds of additional N on your, you have $25 higher cost in nitrogen, and you know this the yield probably isn't there to cover that return.
Yeah, wait. So what you just told me was if you put 50 more pounds on over the optimized level, over the 174, so if you were at 124 or 224,
yeah,
220 pounds, you're just going to lose $25 essentially.
Yeah, I think the costs are going to be about $25 higher. There may be a slight yield increase over that level, and that probably doesn't happen every year. So you're probably not going to cover those costs. And in a year like this, where we're looking at negative incomes already, saving money on that one input is pretty key.
Good stuff. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. On this Tuesday afternoon, time to talk with Dave Chatterton. He is with the Powerline Group from right here in Champaign County. We always take up the agricultural energies with him. Kind of interesting things have been happening with OPEC, and some of that has bled over into the marketplace. Can you tell me about it?
Yeah, Todd, it's been a pretty interesting market here. As we sit here today, we're actually right at the yearly highs that we've had so far for 2019 in crude oil, diesel fuel, and gasoline. And as a matter of fact, we're at about a four-month high in crude oil and gasoline. Diesel fuel got ahead of itself and has backed off just a little bit from its highs that were made in late February. But OPEC has done really something unprecedented here. We knew that they made a production cut back in December and agreed to take 1.2 million barrels per day off of the market. They've actually taken 1.6 million barrels off a day and have exceeded their own expectations. And they've done that with a combination of not only the OPEC members but also getting Russia to go along. So it's been very interesting. This week, they decided to cancel their normal meeting in April where they would talk about those production quotas and move that forward to the end of June. So it looks very likely that these production cuts will stay in place with us not only through the first half of the year, but I think if Saudi Arabia has their way, probably through the end of the year. And that's provided a lot of underlying support for these markets and, as I said, pushed us up to yearly highs for 2019.
What does that mean to producers? And I think probably there are several things to cover. Let's start just with their energy needs, diesel and gasoline.
Yeah, so diesel fuel values have gravitated higher along with the rest of the complex here. And, of course, the inventory situation there had been a little bit tighter. We don't have a tight or a problematic situation in any of the products at this particular time. But diesel fuel, I mean, hopefully guys got a little bit booked here before the end of the year. The market made its lows right around that Christmas time period. That was, right when OPEC made their cuts. That coincided with the Fed taking a more accommodative, stance on interest rate and a rally that began in equity. And, the U.S. dollar coming down lower in that period. So there's a lot of things that have combined to put some legs under this. We've got fund positions that are long in energy but not overly long. So long story short, it's going to make for a very hard profile for a substantial decline in diesel fuel prices between now and, say, planting time or even summer irrigation time. So if you haven't got your tanks filled or your fuel booked, be looking for any price weakness here. You want to be a buyer on those breaks and be a little bit more aggressive on getting things covered here.
This all bleeds over into the fertilizer industry. There's an awful lot of anhydrous ammonia or just plain old nitrogen that needs to go on this spring that didn't get put on last fall. What are your conclusions there?
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a very kind of a track meet of a spring, trying to not only get enough product but get to that product logistically where it needs to be, when it needs to be. The flooding in the river system, the flooding on the rail system is only going to complicate that going forward, particularly for the Western Corn Belt. So anhydrous prices here in central Illinois, over $600 now, $130 or $140 higher than they were last fall. So we've also seen an uptick in the urea prices. It looks like people are securing dry, knowing that, hey, probably gas won't cover it. We're going to need some dry to go over the top. So in essence, I think I would want to get myself covered here, mainly because of logistical issues, but certainly it doesn't look like a situation where we can see prices sag substantially here again in the spring.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
That, of course, is Dave Chatterton. He is with the Powerline Group from right here in Champaign, Illinois. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's take a look now at the weather forecast with Don Day. He's at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don. Thanks so much. I hope you and all the folks out west are doing a lot better today than you were last week.
Yeah, everyone out in the central and western United States still digging out in some areas from the bomb cyclone, they're calling it. But a little bit more spring-like, a lot of the snow is melting away.
Well, tell me about conditions in Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, and parts of Wisconsin.
Well, I tell you, boy, it's been rough for a lot of people in this nation here over the last several weeks. And it looks like, at least here in the short term, over the next few days, this would take us through Friday, that there's only a little bit of rain that's going to be falling in far southeast Nebraska, southern Iowa, northern Missouri. There is a little band of shower and thunderstorm activity that will move through there, but it's not upstream of the flooding, thankfully, at least for a lot of the flooding areas of Nebraska. Then the trend, I'm afraid to say, as we get into the middle to the end of next week, is for likely more stormy weather to come out of the western states and through some of the flood areas, especially South Dakota, Nebraska, portions of Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa, and Missouri, and eastern Kansas. So while there's not a lot in the short term, our long-term charts, unfortunately, are wet.
And wet for how long?
At least for the first week of April. We're expecting that a lot of the stormy weather that has been a hallmark of March is going to continue into early April. The only thing we can say that may be a positive is that we're losing a lot of the cold air that's available in Canada to make some of these storms stronger, and like what we had last week with a blizzard situation. So we may be looking at more liquid than snowfall with these spring storms, but at least through the first 10 days of April, there's more bad weather to come.
That sounds like the continuation of rough conditions as there's rainfall and, well, snow melt at the same time.
It will be. And this is something that's going to go on for probably weeks. We're going to be looking at the Western Corn Belt and those areas getting hit with the flooding really hard right now in a situation with more rain coming, warmer temperatures, and more melting. And then as we go deeper into the spring, the flooding concerns will work their way further west.
Am I right that the problem areas will be the Platte, the Red, and the Missouri rivers?
Those are the big three. The Platte especially hasn't felt the effects yet of melting snowpack in the Rockies, and that's going to come later.
Hey, thanks so much, Don. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd.
Don Day is with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Tuesday afternoon. Do look up and listen to us anytime you'd like. In fact, I added a brand new podcast option for you today. You can find the Closing Market Report, Commodity Week, and the Opening Market Report now in Spotify. So if you're a Spotify user, just search for the Closing Market Report, Commodity Week, or the Opening Market Report and subscribe, and you can listen in your favorite podcast and music option. Of course, you can naturally find us in iTunes, the Google Play Store, on Stitcher, SoundCloud, and in the NPR One app as well. It's all about the service and the distribution of our programming to you in the easiest possible way for you to listen, whether that's online, on the web at willag.org, or in one of your favorite podcast applications. I'm Todd Gleason.